Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we have Natalie Perez. She's from the Aula Fellowship, and we also have Andreas Ramirez from the AI Safety Awareness Project, and they're both here to talk about AI safety and governance. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Great, and I'm glad we got you both on. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting conversation because everybody, I think, is very much aware of the AI tools that are out there. And I think not a day goes by where somebody is talking about using this, that, or the other tool. And I'm just, you know, totally, like, blown away at everything that can be done from, you know, things like ChatGPT or doing, you know, videos and images and music and, you know, what have you. You know, it's all can be done with the right tool and the right prompts. But, you know, this conversation is going to be kind of around the topic of AI safety. But before we actually jump into that, I wanted to have you both talk a little bit about what you do. You know, I didn't give justice to your introduction. So, you know, I want to start off with Natalie. And just to preface, Natalie, your introduction, I mean, you came up with a paper called Levers of Power. So maybe explain a little bit about what was the purpose of Levers of Power, and then maybe a little bit about, you know, what Aula Fellowship is all about.
Yeah, thanks, Bert. I really appreciate it. Aloha, everyone. So this study is, you know, Levers of Power in the Field of AI. So it's an ethnography of personal influence and institutionalization. And really what we did was we looked at 12 decision makers that spanned across higher education, government, business, and civil society, and how they navigated this power when using or implementing AI within organizations. And I have to give a special credit to go out to our first author, Tammy McKenzie, who really led the conceptual development of this work. But we ultimately explored how individuals experience and leverage these levers of power, which are these social mechanisms that help to really shape how institutions respond to technological change. And really tried to, you know, leverage this study to help us better understand how each different participant within their role, how that decision-making context really influenced their sense of decision-making within the organization as it relates to AI. And the organization I'm a part of is Aula. Historically, in Latin-speaking areas, an aula was a place where a community gathers to discuss important topics. And those roots are definitely true for the Aula Fellowship for AI Science, Technology, and Policy. We're a think tank and a nonprofit that's really focused on facilitating global conversations on AI and the responsible use of AI.
And so, Natalie, when being a part of this team that came up with this study and paper, how much of it was sort of in Hawaii? I know that the other authors were across the country, right? So how much of what you contributed were from, let's say, companies here in Hawaii?
It's a really great question. Unfortunately, we didn't have anyone really engaged in Hawaii necessarily, but focused our study more within Canada and the continental United States. And we're really excited and hopeful to be able to expand the study to different areas of power and influence. Not just within North America, but in the broader Polynesia in different areas around the country. So while we didn't have anyone necessarily that represented a position of power in Hawaii, I definitely think that we are beginning to see companies and institutions really looking to leverage AI. And I think there's a great opportunity for us to invest and figure out what's happening at a local context and how is that the same or different in terms of levers of power within those fields and sectors.
So could you describe a little bit about how, let's say, a questionnaire would go to a CEO at a tech company or maybe any company? And what is it that they were being asked with regard to their levers of power and what, you know, they would do to actually perhaps pull on that lever, you know, in the context of what you just described, how they might need to tweak things as they see potential changes happening, you know, with the introduction of this technology?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really, really great question. So first off, you know, we sent sort of these questionnaires and areas of for just interest to many different people across many different organizations, including, you know, academia, government, specifically public policy and economy. We were trying to, you know, also engage in different people within different businesses, whether they're data science or technology. And ultimately, you know, once we got people who said, hey, yeah, I'm interested and I'm willing to commit and share, we really wanted to learn more about their institution.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to figure out, you know, what their role is within their institution, how that organization is set up, whether it's hierarchical or horizontal, and really trying to get a sense of, you know, what is their level within that institution, their sort of role and position of power.
Mm-hmm.
So try to, you know, get a sense of that institutional context.
Okay.
We also asked them to really learn a little bit more about their interactions with society or broader sort of communities, and try to get a sense of, you know, are you working with anyone outside of your company that's helping to influence or inform anything that has to do with governance or governing bodies?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you working with any professional codes of conduct or any specific stakeholders that you're engaging with on one-on-one basis, or, you know, sort of communicating with broader stakeholders within your institution or outside your institution in relation to AI? And then we tried to get even a little bit deeper into, you know, frame up this complex issue that's happening at work in relation to AI. Is it ethical? Is it cultural, political, technological, economic, organizational, or something else? And these things really helped us to look at different layers within the organization and different people's positionality,
mm-hmm.
their level of influence, their level of scope, and also sort of the different challenges that they were grappling with in relation to AI.
And I do want to get to have you maybe share a little bit about your findings, you know, as a result of doing this survey. But I also want to give, you know, Andreas a chance to talk a little bit about, you know, the AI Safety Awareness Project. And so, Andreas, I mean, you know, what is it, can at a high level, what is it that the AI Safety Awareness Project wants to achieve?
Essentially, just trying to give people enough education so that they can get involved in the national AI conversation. So
mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
actually, I mean, it makes total sense why you would want me and Natalie in the same conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Natalie did a ton of great research on levers of power. In their paper, they talk about how civic discourse is not really tapped into quite enough. Civic power is not really built enough. And in the workshops that we run, we see that all the time. Like, well, what can we as an individual do? Well, the very first thing that people can do is actually educate themselves so that they can have an opinion and then actually mm-hmm. voice that opinion on how AI should affect all of us, right? Unfortunately, right now, we're all kind of forced to just accept what Silicon Valley gives us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the state of the world is today. Hopefully in the future, we can hopefully try to make a more democratic system where people have the wherewithal. AI is completely demystified and can get involved in AI decision-making even. So giving the folks that education, getting out of the way for them to form their own opinion with the tools that we've given them is really like our main mission, basically since we got founded back in 2 years ago.
Yeah, no, this is a big issue and a really important topic. And, you know, I do want to kind of circle back to Natalie and maybe she can share a little bit about the findings of Levers of Power. And then I'll get back to you, Andreas, and talk a little bit about how you see, you know, the AI Safety Awareness Project helping to get people to understand, you know, what they need to do to have an opinion, like you just said, right? And how do we create the environment for them to kind of express those opinions? So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Natalie Perez from the Aula Fellowship and Andreas Ramirez from the AI Safety Awareness Project. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Member-supported HPR One. Streaming and more at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Donate today on our website or the HPR mobile app.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR One. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Natalie Perez from the Aula Fellowship and Andreas Ramirez from the AI Safety Awareness Project. And right before the break, you know, getting a kind of a high level understanding of the paper that Natalie helped to author called Levers of Power, as well as, you know, what does the AI Safety Awareness Project, what is their objective? And Andreas shared a little bit about that. Now, as we continue this conversation, I mean, Natalie, what were some of the kind of like findings as a result of doing all these surveys and then pulling together the results of the surveys and then coming to some conclusion as to what, you know, what are those levers of power and what is it that we can do as a result of this paper?
Thanks for that question, Bert. I really appreciate it. You know, at the end of this study, we really generated or identified 4 core findings. So the first finding is around relative personal power. One of the things that we noticed is access and external connection. So most of the respondents within our study were relatively easy to contact, but few actually regularly engaged with different interest groups outside of their institutions. The second thing that we noticed in terms of relative personal power is tenure and empowerment. As expected, senior leaders within organizations seem to feel a bit more powerful, but what we found was that even those with less authority but were working in complex institutions like national governments reported a strong sense of personal agency. And last but not least, capacity for change. So even in traditionally bounded organizations such as religious institutions or national legislatures, individuals reported feeling that they were able to make rapid and substantial changes when they face these external pressures like the rise of AI, and how does that fit in within their organization? The second finding was around institutional stability in times of change. Several of our respondents described how technology helped to maintain stability, and this was especially prevalent during the COVID global pandemic. And so, for instance, we interviewed with a rabbi who had rapidly moved, you know, these centuries-old practices online. Mm-hmm. And while technology enabled this continuity with the congregation, what it also did is exposed inequalities and access. And it also raised some broader questions about, you know, how AI ultimately might mediate not only religious practices, but community relationships, and how that could be problematic in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Our finding number 3 was about influencing institutional change. So we found that decision makers often act on personal values rather than epistemologies that we think would be typically associated with their sectors. So for instance, you know, we identified one tech executive who really felt like they wanted to, you know, or were actively engaging in using AI for social good or the community collective benefit, while a professor actually talked about, you know, prioritizing AI for cost effectiveness. And so this finding suggested that, you know, potentially personal relationships and individual preferences might strongly shape AI-related decisions. That being said, some of our respondents also claim to be accessible, and yet when engaging in, you know, sort of institutional norms or rules or cultural expectations, we found that this often meant that they actually engaged in very limited interactions with people outside of their institutions. And we refer to this gap as sort of, while they believe they're open and accessible, they're actually in practice not.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this in institutional theory as this sense of decoupling, where there's sort of this perception of, yeah, I'm free, I'm accessible, but actually in reality, you know, I can't talk to you about anything.
Yeah.
And so this sort of leads us to our last finding, which is sort of these dynamics of the levers of power. And again, really big kudos to Tammy McKenzie, who really was the lead author in developing these levers of power framework for understanding AI governance across institutions. But there's ultimately 13 principles that make up these levers of power. It focuses on values, institutional infrastructure, governance, collective interest, regulations, informal governance bodies, field configuring events, status, organizational models, norms, classification, and relational challenge channels, as well as idea mobility. Lots of different things there that we could get into, but that's ultimately the sort of 4 core findings of our study.
And what would you like to see happen as a result of having published your study? Now that it's out there, people read it, what would you like to see happen as a result of that?
I think one of the things that, you know, Andreas had pointed to earlier in our conversation was really as an individual, what can I do? I mean, do mm-hmm. I have any power? I think that many people feel potentially unempowered to mm-hmm. be able to engage in this AI field or enact any type of change. What I'd really love to see is that, you know, in terms of informal governance bodies, there's so many opportunities to join NGOs or coalitions that I think are really trying to shape governance indirectly. And I think to Andreas's earlier point, it really starts with education. Starting to really engage means, I think, you know, at the beginning point, really getting a better understanding of what AI is, how it works, and the pitfalls and gaps within current AI systems, policies, and governance. Having that educational understanding of AI, I think, can go a very long way in working with different groups, joining grassroots organizations to really try and push the norms around transparency and ethics and truly what responsible and safe AI means.
You know, that's a great segue to get Andreas back into the conversation. And Andreas, you and I spoke about this earlier, which you described, you know, sort of the introduction of social media as an example. And I clearly remember the love fest that I had with social media back in the honeymoon days of, I think it's like the early 2000s. And I know that I got on with Twitter back in like a 2007, 2008. And it was a love fest, right? But nobody really had any deep conversations of what the impact of social media might turn into. And you described to me how, in a way, the AI tsunami is happening like social media, but it's happening much quicker. And that your kind of mission is to help get that conversation happening sooner than later.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Bert, absolutely crazy that you were there for Twitter in 2007, 2008. I feel like that was the wild, wild west of the internet. So glad you survived that. But honestly, this actually goes back all the way back to a talk that was held by the Center for Humane Technology. I'm pretty sure they created the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. And then they followed that up with a talk on AI called The AI Dilemma. Mm-hmm. If you look it up on YouTube, it'll be the first thing you see. Highly recommend anyone listening to this watches it. It actually played a huge role in me deciding to chase AI safety as a career myself. Mm-hmm. And essentially what they talk about is that social media was sold to us a certain way, right? Back in 07, 08, the early 2000s, early 2010s. Mm-hmm. It was sold to us as a way to connect with friends, a way to connect with family members that don't live in the same city, a way to connect with local businesses, small businesses, or big brands, and get advertising that is relevant to us, right? Like things that we want, right? It was not advertised as a way to potentially break democracy mm-hmm. or potentially get addicted to your phone, right? Mm-hmm. And it's now coming out that some social media companies had some research that might point towards these general trend lines much earlier than, you know, they actually talked about them. The whole point here is that we need to avoid what happened with social media with AI,
yep.
right? Only now are we coming to grips with social media addiction, phone addiction, anxiety and that's induced by constantly being on the phone and constantly being on social media. Only now are we coming to grips with it, and it's 2025, and we're talking about technology that has been affecting us since the early 2000s, right? With AI, it's moving already so quickly. I mean, you just have to look at the news stories of teenage suicides, very tragically, nationwide, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's already having an irreparable harm on families, and yet we just cannot keep up with the rate of development, right? Mm-hmm. So this is just another point of, you know, governance is needed. Governance to me is just like, what should we do with AI to make sure that it's mostly beneficial for most people, right? And unfortunately, we just don't really have a nationwide framework. Now, going back to Natalie's work, it does start with education, but also like an individual might start talking about AI safety at their workplace, right? If you're in a position of power just within your organization or within your own life, right? Mm-hmm. How do you want AI to show up at your organization, at your personal life, et cetera? I think those are really, really big questions that might help empower agency rather than get stuck in like that kind of like helplessness phase, if
mm-hmm,
you will.
Mm-hmm. Now, you both brought up the word governance. So I do want to spend a little bit of time understanding what does governance look like, whether it's AI governance, you know, data governance, could be digital, could be whatever technology that we're talking about. But what does governance really kind of look like? So hold that thought. We'll be right back in a short break to continue our conversation with Natalie Perez from the Aula Fellowship and Andres Ramirez from the AI Safety Awareness Project. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Natalie Perez from the Aula Fellowship and Andres Ramirez from the AI Safety Awareness Project. And, you know, right before the break, great, you know, sort of high-level summaries of what levers of power revealed, as well as the work that the AI Safety Awareness Project is doing. Both of you mentioned governance. And Natalie, you know, describe what you would sort of, let's say, explain to a layperson. What do you see as AI governance?
Thanks for that question, Bert. You know, I view AI governance from two different levels. So sort of a 10,000 foot view, or, you know, what I would call a macro lens. And then, you know, a microscopic lens, mm-hmm. A really, really close up or you know, sort of localized lens. So from a micro or macro level, excuse me, I really view AI governance as focusing on the big system-wide structures that guide how AI is used mm-hmm. by an organization or by a country or by a team. It's really the decisions on how AI is developed, how it's deployed, and how it's regulated. And so I see examples of this with you know potentially national AI regulations and policies, or international standards like the EU AI Act, or corporate-wide AI ethics frameworks. I think there's some core questions that we should always ask when we're thinking about this big wide 10,000 foot view of AI governance, which is what values should guide AI use or development institutionally, or who's accountable when AI causes harm, or how do we regulate AI across industries? So macro AI governance really shapes the overall structure. Now, if we think about it from a microscopic or a micro level, I think that AI governance really then focuses on how individuals or teams or groups actually make decisions about AI in their everyday work. So an example of that could be, maybe a department deciding on, whether or not they're going to adopt AI, mm-hmm. or potentially a teacher who's creating class rules for an AI-assisted assignment, or a software team who's interpreting a company's AI ethics guidelines and how they implement that within a product or a process or a solution. I think the core questions here are how do individual decision makers apply, or maybe how they ignore the AI rules that set up by a country or a company or a group? What influences choices, personal mm-hmm. values, pressures, relationships? How do teams think about data safety and data classification within software environments? And so I think micro AI governance is really about how people actually navigate their own individual power and responsibility with AI. And if we look at AI, I think from this macro and micro perspective, I really think that these views highlight a complexity about AI governance. And I think it's not just about policy. I think that governance can be shaped by values, by culture, relationships, and the personal agency of decision makers.
No, that's really great. And I'm glad you're in Hawaii and can help to sort of shape this conversation as we move forward. Now, you know, Andreas, you have a plan, you have a strategy in terms of, you know, AI Safety Awareness Project. How do you see what you do, let's say, coming to Hawaii to maybe start that conversation and encourage dialogue?
Yeah, absolutely. So at a very broad level, we work with public institutions like libraries, police departments, churches, and we're a bipartisan organization. So we're hoping to actually go to Hawaii in the beginning of next year and host a series of events to connect local legislators with their communities. There's a couple of folks on the legislative side in Hawaii who have talked about the need for AI safety governance, right? So it would be really, really cool to have like kind of like faux town halls, also try to build up like an AI safety kind of education program in Hawaii itself through these institutions so that, you know, you guys don't have to rely on someone from the continental U.S.
Mm-hmm.
to come in and teach you guys about this stuff. What if we taught the birds of the world about this stuff so that they can in turn prop up their own communities, right? And one thing that I'd like to mention there is that what we're finding across all of our workshops, since we are bipartisan, is this idea that I just read of in a paper recently called Uncommon Ground. It's essentially like ideas that people with wildly different views most of the time could still find like somewhat reasonable. And you mentioned earlier, like, what does governance actually look like? Some of these things are like very reasonable, right? I mean, Katie mentioned transparency, right? Accountability. To be clear, like, we have transparent and accountable systems for planes, for trains, for vehicles, for so much in our world, for food, for mm-hmm, drugs,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
All that to say that like something similar, I'm not saying like a outright regulation, but something that provides oversight of the industry. Isn't that crazy? And from what we've seen in our workshops, it's something that's kind of a popular idea. So just wanted to throw that in there.
No, that's great. And, you know, I will definitely be keeping in touch with both of you. I'll put the link to your paper, Levers of Power, Natalie. And then, you know, in terms of Andreas, where can people find out more information about the AI Safety Awareness Project? Andreas, you still there?
Oh, what? Sorry about that. Yes, you can find more information online, AISafetyAwarenessProject.org. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's worth it.
Okay, I'll definitely put that up on our show notes. Natalie Perez is with the Aula Fellowship, and I'll put the link to Levers of Power, and then Andreas Ramirez. He's from the AI Safety Awareness Project. And I want to thank you both for joining me today.
Thanks so much, Bert.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll have our gadget show with a couple of our favorite tech geeks. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is Crystal Spear, and you can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.